set this right here, and it's kind of catching a little bit of everybody. I'll rotate it occasionally.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go put it up on the board and try to shuffle a lot more people over. You guys were already having a conversation, and I interrupted it because you guys were over here, so
yeah.
Continue on.
Okay. So you should tell them.
What's that?
You're pretty good. Is it? Yeah. I watched the Josh reporting something yesterday, and it came out. So you were asking about
it's a hiring.
I'm hiring people that can do WPF and SoFi, and how do you find them?
And that's what we're doing is, like we said, we want people to specialize in the core. So we want designers who can design. Of course, you just mentioned everyone's working. You know, you get a flat comp and they haven't thought through.
Yeah.
Cloud service day transitions, you know, what happens, what's the feedback, mechanism, all sorts of things like you mentioned as well. And so, you know, as a developer, you kind of have to sit down with them, you know, if they haven't sketched out and storyboarded that way. You have to walk them through, all right, I understand that this is what your vision was, yeah, exactly. So it's kind of, do you force, even if it's just designers thinking that way and providing, you know, additional comps, you know, but do they really need,
I don't think
to know the interaction, you know, what it takes to do that?
I don't think it makes sense to get designers to be comps and be designers. I think if you come up with a design approach, literally, it can be, if you think of a cast iron example, some project I was working on internally, we had this menu system. It looked like it was just a big red bar, but the designer actually provided, in the Illustrator function, provided, when you click on it, these three elements are separate, and it breaks apart like this, and this is how it expands. And I didn't need any additional information. I didn't need to go back to it. It was all right there. And I think it's just educating the designers to stop thinking in terms of it's a bit map, it's on screen, but break every element apart and put the design on it. Once you have that interaction and moving pieces defined, you can repeat it for all the other elements. You know, when I click this thing, it's popped up there just like it did it.
Right.
So,
but even little things like that, the easing in and out of the behavior.
It's something that you have to kind of finesse as you go. I mean, I think, you know, designing or illustrating something, so you have to look at it as not how it's going to look at any given state, but what are all the assets that you need? So, you know, illustrating a menu or expanded and drawn up so that you have all the assets. And then when you integrate it, you have the different states and the transition and everything. You need to think a little not linear. But I think in terms of the original question about finding talent, you know, you just have to find somebody who can design and or somebody that can. And then, you know, just help them get exposure to the tools and the process, because either somebody has great design and visual acuity, or they have great, you know, logic and development capability.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, all the tools we work on is the first time we're there. So we can't find a developer or a designer that has experience, but you can find somebody with talent and then give them an environment, work together, and figure out the details.
Have the opportunity to work on projects as well. First time I played with SoFi, I didn't exist.
Right.
I was hand coded into no.
It was still called Avalon back then, right?
So I had to go and learn that stuff. I think from my perspective, the best thing about designers, but they're often very stable and sure. They're half in the software and that stuff.
Right.
And developers tend to have to be more flexible because there's technology. So
that's the other side of the spectrum, is developers just go out and do it, whether or not it's the right solution for what you're trying to do.
Well, yeah, because geeks get all excited about the technology and they'll hop straight into something and go, like, it's the new
platform. Have a seat.
I mean, I could be a camera.
Yes. By yeah. Walking in the room, you walk past the sign and says, implicitly by walking in the room, you give me some technology.
I think.
So.
You're going to find one of those types of people.
Oh, no. Let me see. You don't have to.
And I guess, just you know, we look like Tom. You know, Tom.
Yeah.
He is the integrator.
Yeah.
And we've got two other guys who are awesome at Flash and doing actual Flash apps. And those are the guys that are really having to sit with either the design or the developers and figure out where to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, in the agency world, there's very distinct job titles and roles that, you know, is work close to the house. It's like, are we getting into a point where we're kind of creating a new position and we can all start asking for it on a resume, or, you know, it's not a producer role or a flash designer. It is the, you know, we're calling it rich media development.
Yeah, look at my job title. That's pretty much the only way that you can find people like that.
Right.
And the design groups are often getting, I mean, in my company, the user experience group and the technology group sit right next to each other.
Right. The show, yeah.
And that's pretty much the only way that we can work together, is because we scream across the room and say, hey, what is this? And then they can sit down and show them stuff.
Right.
Do it in a prototype and do it. Yeah. So I think as the industry catches up where the technology is in terms of the interactive agencies know that these disciplines are co-mingled, you're going to start to see more people putting those kinds of job titles on their resumes.
Right.
But maybe you could go and formulate that inside your own company.
By
forming a design technology group, or forming a technical design, it doesn't, whatever you want to call it, but just formulate the skills, the requirements that it is to be in that team.
Right, and we're actually seeing a lot more UX type of roles out there, you know, so it's user experience specialist or user experience manager or interactivity manager, you know, something like that. The title itself just kind of, your responsibility is
there
all about the user
interface. There isn't really a good baseline. You know, when you say developer, you know what a developer is.
Right.
When you say database guy, you know what a database guy is. Designer, I think, is a guy with funky haircut, glasses, wearing a fuck shirt.
Exactly.
You know?
Then you have an interactive designer.
Right. But how are they different from the designer and the multimedia guy? They often usually the same person.
Right.
So, you know, I think you're going to see. The thing is, with a lot of these new technologies, you're getting bigger and bigger amounts of work required in each of these individual pieces. So the teams are going to get bigger and bigger, and as you get bigger and bigger, you're stratifying the different people, you're siloing them. Because originally, the developer guy used to be the database guy. He was also the deployment and support guy. You know? And that's how it works in a smaller company. And as you grow the company, you end up assigning specific people to different roles.
Right.
So that's really the nice way.
Talking about the whole WPF Silverlight and talent. It's like, are we finding, even with the new tools and the, you know, the focus on the front end, are we trying to force designers into the technical side, or are we just trying to make more designers out of the developers? And if we were ramping up Silverlight practice, are we going dev heavy or design heavy? You know, and how does that work out?
So the interesting part. Go ahead and throw him under the bus here a little bit. So that's exactly what they're trying to do, is they're trying to grow a Silverlight and design practice with, they've got an existing firm, Neusoft Solutions, and they're spinning off a new working group, Kinetic. And they, you know, but they're in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and, you know, talent in Grand Rapids, Michigan is harder to find than it is in Austin.
Yeah.
So, or in Chicago. And so, you know, it's very relevant to what they're doing right now. Is, you know, where do you find talent? Do you find talent, or do you grow it?
You grow it.
And well, right now you grow it. You find the raw talent, and then you grow it and integrate it and train into what you need to.
Are you finding it easier to find developers who have a design eye, who want to float more toward the design side? Is it easier to find those people?
I don't think I've ever found a good technologist developer that is real creative visual designer. They're really good. They can be really good at creative solution problems, at the integration role, but sitting down and just doing a visual comp design flow, that's really hard to find. I mean, I think you find designers who are good with pen and pencil or Photoshop or Illustrator. And if you're lucky, motion graphics, you know, maybe point somebody who's done some more film work and those types of things. But, you know, I find that the designer and developer are usually in their camps. And where you get the crossover is that integrator role or that producer role, where you can have a developer who's really a designer or a designer who knows how to do a little bit of development. But the guys that are really either writing the code or we're doing the illustration, pretty well defined, and then it's just finding somebody who's compatible
with the tools and workflow that you need.
Yeah. For something like Silverlight and WPF, I mean, you're going to find people, because .NET's been around since 2000, so you're going to find people that are more comfortable in that environment and can be effective in it immediately. And once you understand, if you've ever built a website, you've done CSS, and you've done all those types of things, you tend to find that they have more of an appreciation of the design side. They may not be designers, but they know how to build the user interface. They know how to add some interactivity. So, I mean, you can't really easily find, but training people up into those areas is possible. And the tools help.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that one of the hurdles that Microsoft has to get past with Silverlight even is the showcase. If you go to the Adobe site and you look at the Flash showcase for everything, you go to the Silverlight site, you can tell that developers put these apps together. And you know, I was calling Silverlight for the longest time a one-trick pony, because the only thing that anybody ever did was a carousel. Hey, I know, let's put some pictures on it. Hey, I know, let's put just a few things. And they took a sample code, they redid it. It kind of looks like ass, but on the Adobe side, it just kicks ass. But it really, some of the apps don't really do anything. But
yeah, they look
great. When you're selling it and you say, hey, I'd like to do this, we want to go forward in Silverlight, the client's looking at you like, are you crazy? Look at that. And it's not because Silverlight can't do it, it's just no designers have really committed.
You're seeing the immaturity of the platform there. And
exactly.
Because the early adopter, if you ever looked at Java when it first came out,
right,
everyone's like, woo, look at this. I'm like, everything's blue.
Right.
Everything is blue. And it takes a while for the impetus to get behind it. I mean, that's some of the stuff that we saw in the showcase yesterday, I thought was really nice to design.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're seeing some design resources behind it now.
Yeah.
Which is what...
But it still needs more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, definitely.
Because you're still getting into the business reality of, we're trying to build a site, and how many people have got Flash installed versus Silverlight?
Yeah.
0.1%, I don't even know what the number is. But
right. It's
growing very rapidly, so I think you're going to start to see people in the Flash world, if they're pragmatic, transferring their skills into Silverlight and be effective.
Right. It's like, you guys, all three of you actually, as an agency, we have to work, we work in .NET, we work in PHP, we work in JSP.
Yeah.
We have to be able to work within the client's boundaries, basically.
Pragmatic technologies.
Yeah, exactly. So we're agnostic to a lot of the platforms we work in. So a lot of times we need the people that can actually do both. We go with we figure out what the business problem is, before we figure out that Silverlight's the way to go or whatever. We just lucked out. I'll tell you, with AMD, they came in and said, this is a Microsoft project.
Yeah,
we're going to do it in Silverlight.
Yeah.
We didn't have to convince them, so we get to go into production there.
Yeah.
But, it's supporting both, and you can't just hire a Silverlight person or a Flash person that only wants to do Flash.
Yeah.
It's like, one of our best Flash developers, our RIA developers now, in his interview, he just made it well known that he is not crazy about Microsoft or any of the technologies, and now he's working on some Silverlight stuff. So
yeah. Yeah, you have really hard opinions coming in, but you really don't know until you start working with the platform. Sometimes it's the right thing. Sometimes it's the right thing at the wrong time.
Right.
You really just have to let it evolve and see what fits.
Yeah.
So when you do get into an engagement like that, Silverlight makes sense because you are working in a .NET environment. How do you typically sell? So this is going to be a little bit of ramp up time, especially since the platform is
sure.
Are you doing some discounting, givebacks, or
is it ramp up time for the team?
For the team.
We eat it. It's internal training, things like that. That you can't necessarily charge the customer for your. You don't want to do on the job training and at the rates that we bill, it's just not fair and it's not good practice.
So with that in mind, are you going to sell it? Are you selling the advantage of the .NET migration, or are you strictly selling a design business?
That really is the question.
Yeah, for my company, we sell I put it like this. We sell it based on the capabilities of the platform. So if you put Flash and Silverlight next to each other, fundamentally they're the same. The thing that you're leveraging in Silverlight, in particularly with 2.0, is .NET Platform. And the fact that that's really rich, it's well factored, it's been out there for a while, you can find people that write code in it, you can be effective in it really quickly, and they've got a great baseline. You've got a lot of that stuff already in Flash. So it's not really a case of differentiating between the two platforms or trying to sell them on something. It's, you know, what is the right tool for the job? If you want to integrate your designer developer workflow and you want it to go from end to end in pure XAML, I'm going to say do it in Silverlight. I'm not going to say use Flash or use Photoshop or Chocolate. Just each engagement you have to look at and say, this makes sense for you, whether it's a performance issue. Because I can think of a cast iron example that recently came up. Really gigantic Flash application. Huge. Like the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Really bad performance because of the underlying data architecture that they were using, but they were very stuck with what they were doing in Flash. Now in .NET you have Link, you can talk to web services, you've got a lot more things that you can pull in that will give you efficiencies, and that's a really easy thing to sell to clients. Like, okay, you took 10 seconds to render this thing in Flash, it takes half a millisecond to render this over. Those are real quantifiable things that you can show to a client, and they can understand that in terms of ROI, they're going to get that much more stuff. Plus, because there's a great base framework, it's easy to say, I don't have to go and write a database connectivity. I don't have to work out how to write a serialization mechanism. You know, it's there for you. Yeah.
And I think just, not that you can't do it in Flash, but you do end up with reusability and everything. As you gain momentum, all of a sudden you've got these code libraries or these templated controls that you're already
very
using. That, I mean, you can even drop them into, create your own subset of XAML, basically. So
yep.
Now you can take your core, pass it off to a team of internal designers on the client side, say, here's what you're running off of, here's your markup, so you can keep up with standards,
yep.
Enforce design guidelines and things like that by forcing them to use a very specific set of controls that, you know, again, you can do it in Flash, but now you've got the ability
yep.
to, you know, distribute it. It's all about the project and the solution framework and the way that, you know, the file organization, and you can integrate it into
yeah.
continuous build processes, things like that, that
yeah.
that really, those are the bigger benefits, and those are the things you should be selling, because really, you know, do you want a product demo in Flash, do you want it in Silverlight? At the end of the day, it's probably not going to make a whole lot of difference if you're doing one project, but as you get down the road,
yeah.
you know, that's where you gain the momentum and the efficiencies there. But you know what we do sometimes is, whether it's code you know, on the development side or on the Flash side, it's really, we do a quick skills assessment of their team. I mean, we understand that we're going to build this, and your team's going to maintain it. We're not going to go in and you know, even sometimes we put some stuff out with drag and drop code that we know that they can hire. You know, we've done the skills assessment. And if we do anything crazy and build our own whole domain model around something,
yeah.
they're lost. You know, it's we never want to leave the bad taste in the mouth and feel like we've locked them into something or a maintenance contract or something, because it's, again, it's a relationship that's going to keep the business coming back. So if you take those things in mind, that's part of the business decision and the value of the project, too. So. How you doing?
Good.
Any other questions?
Okay. That was a good panel. There was a lot of discussion. We do a lot of work in Blend. We do a lot of work in Azure. It really didn't sound like a lot of people using this.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's a very small uptake of that product and not a lot of people using it for the purpose of it.
The bulk of the features are in Blend, first of all.
Yeah.
So it's a bit redundant. You know, I think I was actually surprised one of our artist school designers did all of the design work in design. And picked it up very well, but it's very, you know, if you're an Illustrator, it takes a long time to develop proficiency with it, and so people are very kind of set into it.
Yeah.
And so I think design's much more of a potential tool for newer designers coming in to pick up and explore, but, you know, I find that Blend can do most all the things that you want it to do right there, and then you have Illustrator. So design kind of fills this solution that's a very small gap in between.
Yeah. Plus the one thing I think design has a problem in that XAML comes out as one way. You can't round trip.
And you've
come up with a beautiful layer design and you've exported it, and that's great. And as soon as it gets into Blend, it gets turned into objects. And everything has a state, everything has a lifetime, and it has functionality assigned to it. And you can't manage that in design. But you can manage it in Blend. And yeah, it's, for me, I think Illustrator with a really integrated XAML exporter that does the right thing is the best tool.
And there's
Illustrator, you got the same problem. You can't bring it back in. You can't bring the sample back in.
That's what you can go a lot further, and if it's going to be a one pass,
right.
One pass from Illustrator versus one pass from design, you know, it's as well as Illustrator.
Yeah, go with the richness of the Illustrator's been around for, what, 15 years?
Yeah. You have an expertise base.
They've got such a ridiculous lead that it's going to be very difficult to build something that's going to be. It's going to convince people enough to be able to move to it.
Yeah.
The fact that they'd be better served by taking any of the design tools that they have in design, putting it in Blend, just having Expression Studio. Call that Expression Studio. Put Media Encoder in it. Put the Media Asset Manager in it. And just call it Expression Studio.
Right.
But then you get blurred with the development side of things as well, because now you're talking about Visual Studio. So there's not really... They've done a good thing, but they've also blurred the boundaries in between what is a development environment, what is a design environment.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, and just the whole uptake in the design tools, you've also got, again, the platform agnostic piece.
Right.
If you work on one client, you have to open up Illustrator, and if you open up, you're working on another one, you have to open up, you know, Expression. And that really doesn't make sense. So if you get them working in one tool that they can export this format, then, you know, they have the expertise that way. But really, the interaction piece is, like, even working in Blend, you may find something, you do a quick storyboard on this one element, and then, you know, you're not going to do a separate storyboard for every menu item. You're just going to take that one, then do a dynamic retarget, you know,
yeah.
Say, run this animation here.
You use a control that actually wraps up that functionality, and you can just keep
Yeah, exactly. And so even the usefulness of Blend, really, you know, you take it to the micro level and you just deal with your single piece of functionality you're working on right now, but then you then turn it into a code base and you create a little API. It's kind of like you guys probably weren't in that one. I went to that Flash
Rosetta Stone
thing.
Yeah, well, you've hit on a very good point. I think that one of the key things about Silverlight for me in particular is the fact that you can encapsulate that functionality really easily. And any good programming practices that you've developed in terms of object orientation and functionality, it's really easy to wrap those things up into a DLL and just have a control library that you can grab.
Right.
So, you know, you can do it with visual elements as much as you can do it with code. So
right.
That whole environment's really good.
Yeah, and that's actually with Silverlight too. That's actually, if you can have a dev team that's focusing on the core or the platform, you can create those controls, and then you could actually pass those off to a designer to, you know, it's just like skinning the calendar control.
Yeah.
You've got that. You could actually set a designer up with, here's the documentation, here's the things that you need to do. Go create your prototype, and you don't even need a developer for that first piece or that first pass of it.
Yeah.
So... You know, the reuse again, the control libraries, things like that, it really kind of gets your momentum going.
Now, have you guys done anything with code generation of this thing?
Yes.
Like framework type-based, this is what basically starts you out and has your couple of different components ready to go. It gets you over that like screen.
Yeah.
We tend to work forward from a wireframe release, so we have at least some visual element that we're trying to represent. And it's probably blue box, red box, green box,
right.
Sliding over here. You know, that's what it literally comes down to. You use stepwise refinement to go in and as you get, so while in our user experience practice, a lot of those initial wireframes and user interface, user personas and everything, that stuff is going on in parallel with building some of the back-end systems. And then a designer will come up with a slightly low-resolution comp that gives you a better idea of where, okay, this thing's 300 pixels wide, this thing is X. You know, and you slowly refine the user interface, generating something from not played with it, but you could easily do something like that in Visual Studio.
Yeah, we've actually, the project that I'm building with now, we actually use a framework where, I don't know if it works for all user experiences, but it kind of makes it feel like it's more of a glorified Windows Form development, where each canvas or one would have a show and a hide, because we're thinking of these things as screens, so you can show and hide, where the storyboard isn't defined, but the actual methods and the storyboard name is defined, so things like that with different frameworks. And I don't know if you can fit that throughout, but I think one of the things that you said, where Microsoft is separating and could bring design and blend and everything in, and it kind of blurs the line, I wonder if that's their intent, really, to make, because it definitely blurs the line with me being a developer.
Yeah.
I feel like I can make animations now and work with these things. I mean, I may not be able to get them as sexy or as nice as I need to get them, but I can get them to a point where I can convey maybe some sense of an idea to show what I think the code that we generate or what I want the services to do, and then hand that off to a designer and say, hey,
make it pretty,
or even put your ideas on top of mine, at least so now it's kind of even more of a collaborative approach, where I'm not talking to you about what I think maybe it should do, even though if I can't get it to hook up all the way, I may have to explain some of that, but I can actually show you what I want to do. Where in Flash, there's no way I could go in
and
pick up that action script and things like that.
So that's definitely true. I mean, the approach that I try to take with a lot of these things is, if I'm doing a task repeatedly, I'll extract it off into a base library that does it for me.
Which feels great as a developer.
It feels wonderful.
You feel much cleaner.
Yeah.
Feels great.
I mean, one of my bugbears is I don't like calling this dot get value and this dot set value on elements in Silverlight, so I would prefer to just be able to refer to the instance and get some nice method. I don't have to pass it on the dependency properly, it just gives me value.
Right.
Doing things like that is great.
Right.
And you can't really, you can do it a little bit in Flash, but it's not really, it doesn't feel as easy to me. You know, admittedly, I haven't gone and looked at it in a while, but it still doesn't feel as easy to me as it does in some way.
Microsoft builds development language. I mean, that's their bread and butter.
They're a development technology company.
And you put .NET on top of that, where you have a breadth of developers.
Exactly.
So it definitely blurs the line.
Yeah.
Because I'm in there playing with Expression Blend, and there's no way I would do the same with Flash. I mean, I've tried. ActionScript just doesn't feel like it's nasty.
Yeah. It might actually, because you know, you can build classes, you can build helper objects and data structures and everything in ActionScript. So this might actually help you move from Visual Studio, and you know, it may not be so foreign. Just the whole. We've got keyframes, we've got a timeline to work with, you know, but you can do all the same things that you do with scripting in ActionScript as well, all those animations. So this might be the bridge to help you get over to the Flash side.
Sure.
This is a Microsoft conference,
like
right?
Blend. Developers now have to keep on working it. They have to start playing with that and things like that. So it kind of pushes them into the
I think the key there is this well-defined and comfortable industry standards. Everyone looks at the Photoshop layer palette and goes, oh, it's a layer palette. So you see all those algorithms in the other tools.
Yeah.
And it's maybe not as obvious in Visual Studio as it is in Blend. And I think if they can do something to show you the object hierarchy a little bit more, it's not just a solution, here's a possibility. You can actually see the object hierarchy, how these things map out, how they're structured. That'll make it grasp onto this concept, particularly developing people, because you can understand Z indexes and things pretty easily. So, IS standard makes sense to
me. Yeah.
Any other questions?
How many projects in Silverlight have you guys done?
I have worked on 6 or 7. I want to use it a whole heck of a lot more. I think once people get an appetite for what it can do as a platform, and that's why I was saying I don't want people to look at Silverlight as it does media, it does animation. It's so much more than that, and I think once people finally grok that, you're going to see the interest level in it take off significantly. And once the adoption, I think the Olympics coming up is going to drive the adoption rate through the roof. Because honestly, after seeing that experience yesterday, I don't want to watch it on TV.
I'm not interested.
Yeah. There's no reason to.
It's a crappy experience compared to this. I mean, the thing is, in England, Sky Sports does something very similar with their sports broadcasts. I mean, you do get it on NASCAR and things like that, you know, the in-car cam and all this craziness. But it's not generally something you see on the web. So I think when people see that and latch on to that concept and they're, oh, yeah, because think about when Flash was new. It's like, what is this Flash book? Who's Macromedia? Why do I care? What's Shockwave? You know, and a lot of companies that we engage with will say things like, well, we don't want to install a plugin. It's like, you're running Flash on your site right now. Oh, but it just works. I'm like, I went to Facebook this morning and I had to install a Flash update to see some silly video that somebody sent. So I think people are comfortable with the concept of plugins, and I think once people recognize what the platform will do, you're going to see the amount of demand for it goes through. And it's good to be on the early end of the wave. It's painful because the tools aren't as mature. There are things that you have to get used to that you have to work around a lot. But once you get those techniques and approaches down, it gets easier and easier and easier as you go. So I'm expecting to see much more Silverlight work, particularly around SharePoint, improving the user experience in SharePoint, and less of the, oh look, it's a banner ad, it's just, because that's just well-worn ground, you're not doing anything new, and blurring, that's the low-hanging fruit, and it's unfortunately the thing that makes money.
Yep.
But if you look at WPF and you look at Silverlight, and you're like, hang on, I can run a desktop app in a browser.
Right.
So the whole notion of this, the whole notion of the cloud is where I store my data and all that type of stuff. You really can make that happen. I think Juiced have come out with something that is a desktop OS that runs in Flash. It doesn't do very much, but the idea is a good one. As you see more and more of those types of things, you're going to see Silverlight and Flash even adding more desktop functionality, but doing it on the internet.
Well, if you integrate that also with things like IE8 and, you know, Mozilla 3 and even the Google Gears deal where you do get some offline storage as well, you can start syncing data. You can run browser-based apps, you know, or deploy an XBAP or something along those lines where you're running something, you can be on the airplane, you know, use the new sync framework to sync up the data, things like that. We're just getting...
We're on the crest
we're,
of that
We're merging plane. Into the OS at this point, which... Yeah. Yeah. Again,
the operating system becomes less important, and it's more about your window, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, because when network connections are down, you're still host.
Right.
You haven't synced your data, you're still in a great cloud path.
Right.
So, yeah.
What's typical project size for those projects that you've worked on? Designers and developers.
So a couple of the projects I've worked on have been primarily. Two developers, one designer, me, doing a whole thing from end to end, up to working with existing design teams, getting
intermediary to get it into some.
Yeah, so project
is not ramped up yet.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, being an intermediary most of the time. But
so you do work with outside development teams.
A lot of what my company does, we either do staff augmentation or we handle projects for companies. So it depends on what they're needed. Like, so I was alluding to this, doing a skills audit, and these guys are really hot in databases, but they don't know how to build the UI. So, okay, we'll find people that can do ASP.NET, people that know how to write Ajax, people that can design and do the user research and augment in the areas that make sense.
You guys are agile.
Yes.
Internally, right?
Yes.
So as far as project size goes, what's the average time between the start of the project, kickoff, and first release, regardless of how many sprints you have in there? Is it?
So the goal is with Agile is to issue working software at the end of every sprint.
Right.
Most of the projects I've worked on have been 3-week sprints.
3-week sprints.
With a release at every stage. And we're always... Some of the projects we do continuous integration. But But in the early phases, you may not be able to do that because you've got a lot of disparate pieces.
Right.
But then once you get the thing together and you can start doing continuous integration, you're always delivering software.
Right. But is it production ready? Because, you know, it's one thing to say, well, this works and it's out there. It's only about 25% of what the first release and go live, like product demo, microsite,
it can,
something
like
that.
It can be out there, but it's out there to the client, nobody else.
Yeah, right. that's the definition, I think.
That's what I use release as. This is release as in go live versus, you know, sprint one, sprint two, sprint three.
That's really up in the client's hands.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty strong believer in putting things out there just to get feedback on it, but you run the risk of getting so much feedback that you can't actually finish the project.
Because
opinions, everybody has them. So sometimes it's best to just say, okay, I know it's got problems. Let's slap a beta sticker on it. But everyone does that. And, you know, we'll improve it.
Right.
So if a client wants to push something out there just to gain feedback, there's no reason that you can't do it.
Right.
But you have to get past a certain threshold. If you don't actually have the core functionality of the thing together,
you need to be able to tell the story.
Yeah.
I like the one idea that came out of the panel was the designer shouldn't be talking directly to the client. As soon as they find out that phone's connected to the mouse, connected to the logo, there needs to be both 2 pixels left.
Yeah.
The phone never stops ringing.
Well, it's not only that. We have account service people that are the main point.
Yeah.
And it's real. There's a few things. If you have this one contact calling your designer, you're only getting feedback from that one person. May or may not be the decision maker. You know, the account service people may be getting comments that override the person who just called in. It's that whole thing. But then on the other side, designers can be a bit fragile sometimes. And we try and protect them from seeing the blunt, no way, this sucks, you guys missed the mark.
Somebody is a product manager at a company and they think they understand design or they think they understand branding.
Yeah.
And some of them do get that, but sometimes they don't, and they really should just let the people that are the professionals paid to do that thing do their job.
Yeah.
And by all means, have input, but as long as it's staying within brand guidelines and it's working with what your marketing department wants to do, don't try and over egg the pudding, as they say.
Yeah. One last question.
Sure.
Those six projects that you work on, six projects, so how many of those were front end, broad reach type applications versus, you know, where we want this browser-based web app for inside the company, where we can control the browser, make sure the plugins installed. Kind of looking at, you know, where's the trend right now? Is are you just doing ads, or are you doing functionality, more like we saw with AOL demo?
Yeah.
That's more application-centric.
Yeah. I'm definitely more on the application side.
Okay.
I'm also, depending on who I'm working with, we're looking at experience engineering a lot of the time. So it's taking something and saying, here's a proof of concept. So you have this notion of a product selector. Well, what if we turn it on its head and do it like this? And all your existing data services still work, so all of your investment in your existing infrastructure is still there, but you can put a really crazy new liquid paper. The SharePoint stuff is pretty obvious there, because people look at SharePoint and like hate the user experience. It's like, okay, fine, but you've got all these services that you can expose and make it really easy to consume this data elsewhere and do something completely crazy with it. And if you show them, okay, so here you've got a document list. I actually did a screencast with Josh Holmes about this, but you've got a document list. It's a list of movies or a list of Excel documents. And your carousel concept.
Right.
Let's just go and throw it on a carousel, spin it around. Oh yeah, I want to play the movie. Click. That's much more naturalistic for people because they're used to browsing stuff in shops. Looks completely different to the experience that you get in SharePoint. It's a new way of thinking.
Yeah. Same data, same tools to get the data in. It's just displaying it.
Basically, take the technology of the Hard Rock example, and make that into a SharePoint interface.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. You could go that nuts if you wanted to, because you can actually embed XAML elements.
Zoom in on your document.
Yeah. Exactly. So a lot of what we're doing is that kind of thing. I personally am looking Silverlight more as an extension of the desktop environment and building real applications like that AOL application, building things that actually people use for getting tasks done.
Well, that's good to hear, because that's where I want to see it go. I just don't know what it's really doing anymore.
I think you're going to see the developers, once they get their hands around it, that it's going to, you're going to see so much base functionality built in, that it's going to, you're going to see a lot more applications. Once people get past the fact that you can move things from here to here and fade it.
Right.
I mean, that's just half the course. Just, you can do that in JavaScript, who cares?
Yeah.
When people get past that, and it'll probably take 6 months. I mean, remember when .NET started out, it was like, what is this .NET thing and why do I care? Why am I not using Java or ASP? And then everyone's like, oh, object orientation, well factored. Okay, now I get it. Now people start building bigger applications, and Microsoft take that feedback, put it back into the platform, and then you get master pages, and you get all this other stuff that comes out. So it's a constant cyclical thing when people get their hands on technology and figure out what to do.
Yeah. And at some point, you got to pay the bills. So you do the ads, and you do the basic things. But I guess the big one of the big differentiators is WPF and Silverlight are still just a toolkit. The success of the project still goes back to defining the business goals, defining the requirements. I mean, if you are awesome at WPF but still can't figure out your domain model or the data structure on the back end, it's going to die because you can't do effective queries. If you create this great user interface that doesn't solve the business problem, it's going to die. You know, and that's the one thing. They talked about workflow. It doesn't matter what the tool is. No tool can ever replace face-to-face communication. Me seeing that you understand what I've just said, you know, those sorts of things. And no matter if you get continuous integration or the Subversion tool, I mean, we've been rolling out Subversion to some of our designers, and it's awesome until you see that someone just checked in my file _v2. It's like,
Do you understand the notion of change blocks?
I think we miss the point here. It's those sorts of things. So it's still just a tool set. It's still just, you know, you still have to sell the idea of the bigger application, regardless of the fact that you're going to do it in WPF or WinForms or ASP.NET or something like that. So it's still, we try and get clients not to buy off on the fact that this failed or succeeded because it was WPF. It may have helped us get to market faster and, you know, more predictable results, you know, and help us test faster and things like that, but it's still, did you solve the business problem regardless of what you use? And that really is the number one thing that'll make or break the project.
Solution selling, not technology.
Exactly.
Technology really, I mean, my company's exclusive in Microsoft space, but you have to be pragmatic. Look at technology and go, you know, there's some good stuff in Ruby. There's some good stuff in Ruby on Rails. There's good stuff in Flash. There's good stuff in, you know, and take those good things and put them into your own platform, you know, to improve it.
Right.
All right.
Cool deal.
I think we're done talking.
I think we're done. We're out.